Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Toronto Maple Leafs, after saying they were intimidated last year in the first two games of the playoffs against the Bruins, are going to come in and win game one. They scored twice in the second period, added on an empty netter here in the third period as the horn sounds. And game one is complete. Your final, the Toronto Maple Leafs 4 and the Boston Bruins 1 in this best of 7 opening round matchup.
Welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning as we come to you live from the BeFit Heroes Cup hockey tournament out at the New England Sports Center in Marlboro. Ryan Johnston joined this week by Billy Jaffe of Nesson, who is not only going to be hosting with us this morning, but is also going to be playing here today as well.
We got a geriatric division.
Good. Thanks for being with us. Good to see you here.
No, it's great. Great to be out here. What an event. Came out and played yesterday and had a ton of fun. I believe it's 118, something crazy. Whatever it is. If it's 40 teams, it's unbelievable.
It's over 100.
Yeah. I think it's 108 teams that are here. And the amount of good guys that I've already met, and that's such a, you know, whatever, generic statement, but it's legit. I'm talking just good guys, hockey guys, love it. This is what it's about. It truly is. It's very cool. I'm playing with a great group of guys. We got beat yesterday, goal in the last minute and a half or so. Again, it's beat by a Worcester Fire. They all got these Fu Manchus. You know, they got these Fu Mans going. So, you know, they're tough. They're intimidating. No, if we were the Bruins, we would have said we gave it to them. No, they earned it. I'm kidding, Worcester. You guys were great. We had a great time. Look, John Whiteside's former, you know, Bruins guy here, strength and condition coach. What a great guy involved with it. And everybody just runs a first-class operation out here. So I'm thrilled to be here. You've got me for about an hour and 40, and then I've got to go Ben Gay it up. I need about a good half an hour to lube it up.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the game one of the series the other night as we look forward to game two tonight. Am I correct in saying that the result of game one was said a lot more about the Bruins than it did about the Toronto Maple Leafs? I'm not trying to take too much credit away from the Leafs because they played a good game, but I mean, the Bruins could not have done a whole lot more to hand it to them.
Yes, but Toronto is saying they handed it to us because we did what we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so yes, if you're a Bruin fan, it's half empty. If you're a Leaf fan, it's half full, meaning the glass, you know, or the beer can, so to speak. And yes, the Boston Bruins, we used the term on the air. Bruce talked about it too. Had so many self-inflicted wounds, so many in the game. But that's what we see because we follow the team so much. Toronto, again, on the other hand, saying, you know what? We put the puck where we wanted to all the time. And by doing that repeatedly, we attacked them and we forced them into bad decisions. We got them out of their structure. So which one do you listen to? Doesn't matter. If we're talking Bruins, oh, man. I'd like to believe it can't get much worse or any worse.
That's one of the worst games we've seen out of this team all year.
It is. There were a couple of other kind of barf-inducing, you know, I mean, that happens at times on an 82-game season.
Sure.
But in a big game moment, you know, let's not forget, there's a stretch where they had numerous two-goal leads. Remember in the year, what was it, December, Philly, Carolina, and then, you know, they gave up those leads. But this is different. This is a high-pressure game, and for the most part, this team this year, you're right, RJ, has come through. So in that game the other night, too much east-west, too much watching of the puck, watching of the play instead of initiating the play. I felt too much waiting around. Like, quite honestly, I thought the middle six for the Bees, I thought Krejci was really good. Obviously, the Coil line was their most consistent line. Mm-hmm. But their top and their bottom lines, I thought, were not there. Bergie was good. Marchand, Pasternak, not there. Fourth line, not there. A little bit here and there, but not enough. But defense, you know,
Well, it's tough to play defense, like quality defense, when you're giving up breakaways and odd man rushes all night.
Giving up breakaways and odd man rushes because you're not playing structured defense. And defense doesn't mean your own zone. I'm talking about handling the puck in your own zone, neutral zone, everything. And the Bruins got, I said going into this series, and this was maybe it's too general, but I said if the Bruins keep their structure, they'll win this series. And it's not going to be in four games, but they're going to win this series. But if they get out of their structure and they get gapped out, which they did the other night, they're going to lose because Toronto's too good at that game. They're way too good at that game.
All right, so we looked at it from, you know, Bruins' perspective, Leafs' perspective. How do you look at it? How do you – when you come out of that game, like, do you do you feel worried about this series?
Well, I'm a worrier to begin with, so, you know.
I mean, mother hen.
Yes, exactly. you know, the sky is falling, and do I worry? I don't worry yet. All kidding aside, I don't worry yet. That doesn't mean I'm saying Bruins got this in the bag. It's saying, okay, go out, show us, show yourself, show us that you're going to come out and you're going to play that kind of game where passes are quicker and it's not high risk and it's getting into the offensive zone. And I mean, except for the third line, how often did we see a lot of cycling? We didn't. And puck, I mean, there was 10 minutes of that second period where they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And how good was that? And they couldn't score, yeah. And Freddie Anderson was good. So I say if we see that, much more of that, I'd love to think that this team has it. That, yeah, I'm not worried. I'm saying this is what I expected. I thought, like a lot of other people out there, six minimum, if not a seven-game series. Because I still think that, you know, even as well as the Bruins can play, they're going to have to deal with some – my guess is somebody's going to get injured along the way, and they're going to have to deal with a team that – I don't know, you heard that comment from Judd at the end of our open there. A team that came in and admitted that they were intimidated last year, the first two games. We're seeing a more mature team from Toronto.
But if the Bruins play to their level and Toronto plays to their level, Bruins win the series, right?
I think so. I would think so. But it's not – It's a minimum six or a seven series.
I expected that going in, right. Even before game one. I expected that this is a minimum six-game series.
Because I just think the Bruins did not get after the defense of Toronto nearly enough. And when they did, now Morgan Riley's good. He's good. He's their best defenseman. Zaitsev, you know, I didn't think, you know, Dermott, what did he play? I don't have 12 minutes or something in front of him. Gardner didn't play more than 15 or 16. And I like Jake Gardner. He takes a ton of crap. He takes a ton, but they also realize that they need him. They missed him. I just don't think the Bruins played in their zone enough. I think they wear him down. I do if they play their game. But, you know, we're saying the same thing about Tampa Bay right now. I know we'll touch on that later. Holy crap if they – I mean
– I don't think anybody saw that one coming.
Well, their best players have stunk.
Yeah. Well, and one of their best players may not be around for game three either.
He shouldn't be.
That Kucherov, that we'll was talk about that ugly minute, hit last but night.
Stupid.
617-779-0985 as we get started here from the New England Sports Center. Let's grab Maria in Watertown up first. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, guys. Hey, Billy, good luck today.
Yeah, thank you. We took Billy off headset for a second. We're trying to deal with a technical issue. Go ahead.
Oh, all right. Well,
you got me, Maria.
She was wishing you good luck for today.
Thank you, Maria. I could have used one of your egg sandwiches to get me going this morning, but I'll have to do it with the banana.
I actually contemplated driving up there today, but I was a little bit lazy this morning, I must admit.
Maria, if you want to come see what is, you know what, you know, in the games, we show sometimes super slow-mo replays.
Yeah,
that's what it looks like all the time.
If you want to see the game in slow motion, just come on out here. You'll see the puck fly when you're watching me, not the other guys. Anyways,
maybe I'll surprise you guys. So here's the thing. The big concern I had, and first let me say, I don't want to hear anybody calling this morning and talking about Tuukka costing them that game. I don't want to hear it. That was not on Tuukka. That was a total team loss. There were very, very few players who showed up to play that game. What was concerning to me and the fear that I had going into this was that risk-reward power play. And that, gentleman, cost the Bruins the game. Having forwards at the point who are not prepared to handle things defensively that cost them that game. And I thought for sure that Bruce Cassidy would button that up especially against a team like Toronto with the speed that they have. And then the Bruins just tried to play their game, the Toronto Maple Leafs game, which is that run and gun, and that is not what this team is built on. And so I found that frustrating and disappointing. Now, having said that, do I expect them to play as poorly today as they did Thursday night? No, I don't. And they need to seize the day and seize this opportunity, because they don't want to deal with what Tampa Bay is dealing with right now, which is totally losing home ice advantage at this point and being down 2-0 and going into hostile territory. And then with Nikita Kucherov, I can't believe what he did. That was just stupid, blatant, horrible, despicable. He should be suspended for a minimum of at least one game. I might even give him 2 games. And that's what happens, gentlemen, when you've been the best of the best all season long and the pressure that is put on your team, you start not playing with a level head. Yeah. So I'd just like to hear your thoughts, guys, and hopefully, you know, what do they do to fix that issue at the power play? Because those odd man rushes and that shorthanded goal giveaway, that cannot continue to happen in the playoffs. You lose games when that happens.
Thank you, Maria. They've been playing with fire. Well, let me rephrase it. The power play at times has been on fire. I mean, hot, white hot, right? And at other times, it has been, they've been playing with fire, giving up. They gave up the most shorthanded goals in the NHL this year. They tied, with Pittsburgh, right, with 15. It's something that absolutely has to be addressed. But if you're talking about having two defensemen back there, that, first of all, there's been a lot of times on the ice where the guy in the back there has been the D-man, and the pucks bounce by him, and they haven't been able to do it. Now, you're not going to put a defensive defenseman out there just to handle the puck.
Right.
You know, just to be back there as a stopgap. That's going to be – I mean, I know this will be something that will be significantly addressed. They talk about it all the time, but I think in the offseason they're really going to have to discuss. I mean, do we get different formation or whatever? The power play is so lethal when it's flying or zipping the puck around that I do think that Bruce, who is an offensive-minded coach, is willing to take that risk-reward. The problem is it is one of the ultimate buzzkills. I mean, even just – shorthanded chances against, they scare you. You know, I don't know if you caught this the other night, but Tuukka Rask coming in the regular season, along with Marty Jones, they faced the most shorthanded shot attempts in the National Hockey League. Tuukka faced about 18 or 20 more than Yarho, and they played pretty much the same amount of games. So what is, I mean, just a weird coincidence maybe, but more shorthanded chances against RJ than anybody else in the National Hockey League. So what do they do? Well, you know, look, Jake DeBrusk admitted, he says, well, so he's taking this route. He's coming into that high, it's not even a slot, that over the blue line. Krug is off to his left. They get the pass from the right wing half wall, and it gets caught in his tweener land. That kind of, you know, it's in between his legs. But even Jake said, he says, I looked at the replay, and what was I trying to do there? He's trying to bring the stick back in, and then away they go, momentum. Boom, one way, and it goes back the other way. You can't catch up to a guy. You can't. When your feet are going one way, unless you're that ultimate speed demon, you can't. We got burned. Our team got burned. Danger Close here yesterday. Yours truly got burned. I was playing. I was doing my best Bruin imitation out there. Sucks. I felt awful. Thank God a teammate picked me up. But listen, Maria's right. This was a team loss. Let's just get the Tuukka thing out of the way.
Well, hold off on that, because we're going to talk more about that. We're up against it here, so we'll put a bookmark in that, and we'll get back to that coming up in a bit. We're going to talk with Bob Beers coming up next, and we'll get his thoughts on Game 1 and Game 2, which is tonight here on the Sports Hub, of course, and we can take your calls throughout. 617-779-0985. Ryan Johnston with Billy Jaffe live from the BFIT Heroes Cup. I keep trying to call it a club. It's Heroes Cup in Marlboro at the New England Sports Center here on The Hockey Show.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, Bob Beers, the home of the Bees, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hey,
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show coming to you this morning live from the New England Sports Center in Marlboro. The BFIT Heroes Cup, as Billy Jaffe joins me this morning, the rest of the crew off covering morning skates and all of that fun stuff. So
yeah, I went to practice yesterday, knowing that I had this today, so I got that in. Full hour pregame, by the way, just a reminder, on NESN tonight, despite the fact the game is on NBC, we will be starting at 7 o'clock on NESN with our full pregame.
Excellent. Yes. Good to know. We welcome in now one of our other co-hosts, Bob Beers, joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Beersy.
Good morning, guys. How are we doing?
Good. We opened the show talking a little bit about the about game one. What were your feelings about the Bruins' performance, especially in game one, and does anything change in the way that you view this series coming out of that game?
Nothing changes yet. Certainly, if the Bruins don't respond with a better game today, then things might change a little bit in my mind. But no, give Toronto full marks. They did what they needed to. They played a good game. They executed their game plan. They were better defensively than advertised. I don't know if they can continue that, but they were good in that game, especially when they had the lead in the third period. They played well.
Yeah.
For the Bruins, but like I said, I don't want to take anything away from Toronto, but the Bruins just they didn't do anything. I shouldn't say anything. They did very few things that that they talked about coming into the game that were important. They didn't execute them. The turnovers, giving too much time and space, letting guys get behind them. Those are all the things that were covered coming into the game. They had a game plan. They didn't execute it, and we'll see what they can do here tonight. And I expect a much better game from the Bruins.
Bobby, I don't know if you agree or not. I thought the Bruins were cautious early on, almost like they were thinking too much. They were watching the play instead of participating in the play. Maybe not as cautious as somebody I know who's got a new truck going down the ramp, but you know what I mean.
Hey.
But Bob, do you agree with that? It just seemed like it just took them. Some of the players were into it, but others seemed to be by no means passengers, but they were watching instead of more watching than what we're used to seeing. Is that fair?
Yeah, maybe thinking too much instead of just playing. And, it was interesting. There was a comment made by Bruce Cassidy a few days ago, and he said, we go over all these things. We got meetings, we've got video. We make sure that they're, informed, whether it's tendencies, everything else. And he said, sometimes you think that it might be even too much. Instead of just kind of letting them go and play. It had a little bit of that feeling maybe earlier in the game. I mean, that being said, you had a 1-0 lead. There's so many self-inflicted things that happened in that game. The turnovers, the breakaways that they gave up. And some of it's going to be forced. You're going to turn the puck over from time to time. Toronto's a good team. They're going to be on you quick. We realize that. But at the same time, there was a lot of unforced errors, I thought. And, just missed passes, icings, pucks hitting skates. Even when you're trying to get moving up the ice, somebody asked me the other day, are the Bruins are they not a fast team? I said, well, you don't put passes on the tape, you're not a fast team, right? Yeah. If you're digging passes out of your skates and trying to pick them off the boards, you're not going to play fast. And it just looked like there was a lot of that the other day. So whether that was jitters or whatever it was, I don't know. I mean, it looked like the Bruins were, I don't know if nervous is the right word, but it just maybe thinking, overthinking it, like you said, there was something in their heads it looked like in that one.
Yeah, just uncharacteristic mistakes, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it didn't look like the Bruins team that we've watched for 82 games.
No, and, that's why I expect a much better game today from them. We've seen them bounce back from, subpar games all season long. When they haven't had it for a period here and there, or they haven't had it for a game, they seem to bounce back. So, but now you're playing against a good team night in and night out. You got to realize that, and, we'll see what they bring here today.
Bobby, I don't know if I don't know if people watch Toronto as much as, say, like guys like we do and everything, but is it even a question in your mind that Mitch Marner's their best player? And they got, Matthews is just fantastic. Tavares is fantastic.
Yep.
But is it really even a question, Bobby, in your mind?
Not the games that we've seen, certainly.
Exactly.
Matthews comes with,
with high marks and what he's capable of doing. Tavares has 47 goals this season. Marner, you know, he has been, you know, they talk about guys that drive lines, you know, centermen that drive lines. Marner drives a line from the wing. You know, he's you know, I don't know how many guys actually do that around the league.
Patrick Kane, maybe. Right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's elite, and the Bruins have to find a way to slow him down. There's no question. I thought that they, you know, they gift-wrapped one, that the shorthanded one for him. You know, but they didn't handle the puck quite as well as they wanted to at the offensive blue line, and all of a sudden he's gone on a breakaway. But, no, they need to find a way to slow him down. There's no question. And whether it's the forwards coming back, just taking away that time and space, they have to do a little bit extra against him.
I mean, the Bruins obviously found themselves in a situation the other night where they were, you know, once you get behind, you kind of end up chasing the game, which against a team like Toronto is a dangerous place to be. I mean, a strong start tonight is going to be critical for them, but what do they need to do to get more pressure on the Toronto defense? Because that's clearly a weakness on this team. You know, defense and goaltending is not at their forefront here. So what can the Bruins do to get more pressure on them and ultimately, obviously, score more than one goal that they ended up with on Thursday night?
But, I mean, I'll ask you a question. Do they have any defensemen that, if you're a forward, if you're a player, if you're, you know, a player trying to get to the front of the net that intimidates you?
Not at all.
Yeah. No. So there's got to be some will there, right? There's got to be some will that, hey, we're getting inside these guys and we are going to make them work. We're going to put them back against the glass. We're going to, you know, we're going to finish the hits, you know, in that offensive zone. You know, we're going to make sure the puck gets behind their D and make them turn and have to go get it. And then when you get in that offensive end, there was a lot of hope plays the other day, especially when the Bruins got down in that game. When I watched the game over again yesterday, you know, I saw passes, you know, just hoping to connect in front of the net. And that's not going to work for anybody. Make them work. Don't turn the puck over or don't hope to make a play. Make the right play. Protect the puck. Make them work. Get to the middle of the ice. Make sure those shots get through. And if they're not getting through from the point, you're rotating it back down around behind the net. And then the forward can peel off from the front. He can go get it. And now you continue to make them work defensively. That is their weakest point. Make them work defensively. And there's no secret there to Toronto's team. And I thought they looked good defensively last game. I don't know how they can – I don't know if they can continue that if the Bruins execute the way that they need to in the offensive zone.
Their third period D, Bob touched on it a few minutes ago, and we talked about it in our post. We're going to touch on it tonight too. That was one of the best five-man unit defense I've seen Toronto play in a long time.
It was.
Maybe this year, quite honestly. And you want to talk about Will, Bob? That was Will right there. They showed some Will in that third period, I thought.
They did. They showed me something in the third. I mean, but I don't think, again, Billy, I don't think the Bruins were nearly at their best. They were a little frustrated, it seemed, and that's when those hope plays start. You know, you pick off a pass because Toronto was giving the puck away, especially early and even late. You know, in the third period, they gave the puck away a few times. You know, what do you do with it once you get it? And it everything kind of died there. There was nothing. There were a couple little chances here and there. They tried to get to the inside on a couple of occasions, but this, you know, the Bruins could do a much better job in that area. And I thought as good as Toronto looked, I thought they made them look good in certain spots.
Yeah, no question. I thought that Charlie Coyle had a pretty consistent game. He gets a lot of chances. I know some people, well, self-included, would love to see him finish one of them. But to me, when I look at that stat line, and I always take it with a little bit of grain of salt, I love seeing the seven hits next to his name. And what did you think of his performance, Bob, in game one?
I thought it was good. You know, he was far from the problem, you know, in that game. I told somebody the other day, you know, someone was mentioning, talking about Coyle and saying, you know, you really wish he could finish a little bit more. I said, well, if he was a guy as big and protected the puck and he finished a lot, he probably wouldn't have been available at the deadline. So, you always want a little bit more. And he's capable. There's no question. And I think we will see it, you know, just not to the extent that you're kind of hoping you see it. But he's a valuable piece for the Bruins in terms of protecting the puck, and again, just going back to what we were talking about, making those D work, making them work in the defensive zone. He's good at that, you know, and he'll hold on to it. You know, try to hold on to it maybe just a little bit more, get a little help from his line mates, and we'll see who he plays with today, because it looks like they might make a couple of changes coming in tonight's game. But I had no problem with his game the other day, other than I would have loved to see him finish maybe in that second period. He hit a post, he had a couple good chances, and that could have maybe turned the game around a bit.
All right, Bob Beers, appreciate you taking a few minutes with us this morning. We'll be listening tonight.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Bobby.
He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Billy Jaffe is with us. We are live from the BeFit Heroes Cup at the New England Sports Center in Marlboro. We will continue. We'll get to more of your calls coming up at 617-779-0985. We'll also talk with Judd Surratt coming up in this hour as well. Sports Hub headlines back in our studios in Dorchester, and then more of the Hockey Show coming up next.
This is the Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. Back here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show, live from the New England Sports Center in Marlboro, the BeFit Heroes Cup going on all this weekend. Ryan Johnston joined by Billy Jaffe before we continue on about the Bruins. Because we're, you know, it's like a celebration of hockey kind of weekend, right? NHL playoffs are underway. We're out here at this terrific facility where there's, you know, roughly 37 rinks going all at once and all the hockey you can possibly muster. Don't want to leave out the fact that UMass Minutemen are playing for a national championship tonight. How about that?
And Kel McCarr.
We're not. Oh. We lost.
Right.
What do you keep doing over there?
I have
there?
Done nothing.
Honestly, God. Every segment, we just change Billy's headset just for fun. There we go.
Yep. Use this one. Use that one. Use this one. All good. UMass wins a crazy game the other night. I didn't get to watch that much of it because obviously we had the Bruins Leafs, but I saw some highlights, watched the end of it, overtime, and Kale McCarr wins the Hobie, by the way. Congratulations. And deservedly so.
Yeah.
He was best player in college hockey by far. There's a couple of others that were fantastic too, but Kale deserved it by far. But they go in and they win in overtime. Delgazzo, there's two Delgazzo brothers on UMass, and Mark, from the slap shot from the left point, comes in and bam! I mean, it was over, and they beat Denver. And Greg Carvel and his staff have done a beautiful job here this year. It's not that this is their only year, but to do it. But when you have the best player in the land and a couple of other great players, they got another second rounder in Mario Ferraro. He's a hell of a player. They got the other guys like Chafee and Leonard to play there. This is a team that this is their year to win it, because a lot of these guys are going to be gone. Kale's going to be gone.
It's funny
tomorrow,
because it feels like they kind of came out of nowhere.
Well, they did.
But at the same time, you know, they've been building this. I mean, it's
3 years.
Yeah.
This is the thing, RJ. It took them three measly years. But that's what a couple of players can do. You know, Kale McCarr ends up signing with the old coach, John Micheletto, who is at UMass. And so you got to really tip your hat to John Micheletto to get this kid who was – he wasn't the player when he was recruited. He was good, but he wasn't the first-round pick that he became. He had really ascended the ladder quickly. And so, anyways, and then Greg Carvel and his staff keep his commitment there. Kale loves it at UMass, goes there. He's done. He's done after tonight. He could be in Colorado tomorrow. I'm being a little smart alecky, but maybe not. Maybe Monday. He could.
Sure.
He could probably play for them right now. So special team, but they are playing a hell of a UMD, Minnesota Duluth team tonight. One of my favorite guys coaching, Scott Sandlin, coaches UMD. He's good.
Yeah.
Real good program. They won it last year. By the way, Carson Kuhlman played for him, was the NCAA Frozen Four last year. I'm stealing your water.
You're stealing my water.
Sorry.
You're all out of sorts this morning.
I am.
You're worried about the game.
I'm talking hockey. I'm excited.
Let's welcome in Judd Surratt now, who, of course, will call the game tonight here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, 7:30 pregame, 8 o'clock faceoff, along with Bob Beers. Good morning, Judd.
Good morning, boys. How are you?
We're doing great. We're sitting in a hockey rink. You know, Billy's stretching out here during breaks, getting ready to take the ice.
Sponsored me, Judd. Ben Gay has. It's getting me going. Just getting me loosened up a little bit.
You're like Marian Hossett. You're going to have to come in like 90 minutes, 2 hours, you know, prior to the start of warm-up, you know, to get yourself kind of loosened up, ready to go, you know, so you can perform at a high elite level.
Yeah, but Billy's also like Yager. It takes him like 3 hours after the game. He's out there skating and can't get him off the ice.
I thought you were going to say to do my hair. But if only we had that mullet.
You got the weighted vest. You're doing all these unorthodox drills. You're having the trainer, go shoulder to shoulder with you off the ice.
No, Judd, the weighted vest is called my belly. That's what it's built in. So yes.
Yeah, I got one too.
All good. So what are you feeling today? I didn't feel awful yesterday, partner, but I didn't feel, obviously you don't feel good after a loss, but the sky didn't fall. Now the sun didn't come out yesterday, literally, because it was a gray day all day. But were you down as some other people, Judd?
No, not necessarily. I think if you're the Bruins, listen, I think that if you're able to improve the way you play, with all due respect to Toronto and the way they played, and Mitch Marner in particular, who was terrific, and Freddie Anderson, but I think if they're able to manage the puck better, if they're able to come out of their zone a lot more cleanly, I think, to Bob Beers' point, because I listened to his segment, I think if they're able to do a better job in the offensive zone, where they're putting pucks, how they manage pucks, and how they get to Freddie Anderson attacking the middle. I don't think that was one of the things that the Bruins did adeptly. I think a lot of times they could have held pucks down low, forced Toronto to grind it out a little bit more, make them work. And the other thing about Freddie Anderson is if you're able to get traffic in front of him, that's not something he necessarily deals with well, especially
nope.
getting bumped. So that'll be something to watch for as this series progresses. So I think a lot of this is still in the Bruins' hands, and we've certainly seen this team execute a lot better across the last few months.
Judd, how concerned should we be about the health of Jake DeBrusk?
I do think it's a concern, but I also think at the same time, Ryan, that the Bruins have found ways to win all season long without key players in their lineup. Jake is obviously a big loss. He adds to that second line. He and David Krejci have been a great duo all season long. Jake was certainly a factor last year in the first round against the Toronto Maple Leafs, even though he was banged up. And if I remember right, he was banged up in game one and then re-injured himself later in the series, still came back and played and scored twice in game seven. But I do think it's significant, but that said, they have found ways to win all season long without key guys in their lineup.
What we should emphasize, too, is that we don't know if he's in or out yet for tonight.
When it comes to the playoffs, I think that's a good point. Whatever's being said, I think that you have to either take that with a grain of salt or disregard it entirely. What'll matter is when we're handed the roster sheet just before faceoff tonight at 8.
Yeah, and Bruce Cassidy's he's pretty open in the sense of, we'll see. He may even tell guys this morning the media this morning. We'll have to wait and see. The Bruins had everybody out yesterday at practice, too, so except for Jake DeBrusk. So it might be an optional practice. Although, with an 8 p.m. start tonight, who knows? Judd, let's touch on what you thought of keeping the lines together. We've seen Bruce Cassidy move the lines a lot, an awful lot during the regular season. He touched on that a little yesterday. He wanted to see if he could get some guys going. Were you a little surprised that there weren't some more line changes, say, heading into the third period, though?
I was a little bit. He's admitted he's a tinkerer, and he certainly has at all different points of the season. But I think Bruce Cassidy, one of the things that he had said was he didn't think that moving anybody really would have had any type of impact. Obviously, we're not going to be able to know that. But that was a little bit different for me, especially for a team that has done a lot of that throughout the course of the season. To maybe throw Toronto a different look, to maybe jumpstart a few guys. That's something we didn't see in game one. Maybe we'll see a little bit more of it in game two. But obviously a lot of that is how it unfolds. If you look at the other thing that I think Bob Beers and I had talked about on the heels of game one on the air in the postgame show, one of the reasons Toronto was successful in game one, their best players were their best players.
Oh, yeah.
So the Bruins' best players need to respond. I thought Patrice Bergeron, David Krejci, I thought, they were very good. But I think that there's a lot more from Marchand, Pasternak, McAvoy, and Rask.
You mentioned McAvoy. I would say I would throw Chara on that list as well. He had a bit of a rough night the other night. I know some people on the station yesterday were more than a little concerned, as though he had suddenly aged a decade overnight. But look, he's going to have a difficult time with the speed of Toronto at times, but at the same time, we know he's not as bad as we saw the other night.
Well, Ryan, I think with players that have played a long time like he has, I think sometimes the layoff affects them differently. Since we brought up Marian Hossa at the start of our conversation, I remember Marian used to say, and you know, when Charles says this to some extent too, that when he doesn't play a lot or doesn't play at all, it takes away from his game. So I think having a longer layoff for a guy who's 42 years old, having played, having a break from Saturday to Thursday, I think that impacts him differently than a guy like David Pastrnak.
So I kind of wondered that too. With most of the big names on this team, a lot of these guys hadn't played in a game in about a week and a half.
Well, listen, both teams were under the same scenario, and clearly it didn't impact Toronto.
Right.
You know, I will say, in looking at Patrick Marleau, you know, I thought he was fine, but I didn't notice him as much. You know, and granted, Patrick Marleau has not had the regular season that I think the Maple Leafs were hoping that he would have. But for Zdeno Chara in particular, I think having a game under his belt, coming back 48 hours later, playing again, I think that's going to help him.
It should. You know, this team rested a lot of players, remember, down the last three games?
Yep.
So it really, it's not an excuse, but it really had an impact, I think, on this team. Maybe a little out of sync. Maybe a little out of sorts.
They looked rusty, and maybe, right? Looked,
yeah, and also when we touched on this with Bob, and Judd and I talked last night too, perhaps, I don't want to say paralysis by analysis, because they were completely, but they were, there was a lot of info, and as Bobby alluded to as well, maybe too much watching, Judd, maybe too much thinking instead of just playing when it's all said.
Maybe. I didn't mind the first period, you know, and to me that was a very typical first period in the playoffs.
Feel it out.
You know,
yeah, feel out period.
The question started to come, you know, with the dish up top to Jake DeBrusque, he loses the puck, you know, and then all of a sudden the game starts to change. I think just thinking back to game one, Freddie Anderson makes a couple of key saves. Charlie Coyle had two shifts where I think he pounded four pucks to the net. Three were on net. One cranked off the post. That was the other difference in the game. You know, and from a defensive standpoint, it's not as though, you know, Matthews and these guys had some chances, but it's not as though Matthews and Marner and some of these guys and John Tavares were ripping you up in your third of the ice. That wasn't necessarily the case. You had a penalty shot goal. You made the right decision. You just didn't execute for Marcus Johansson. Somehow that diagonal cross-ice pass gets through to William Nylander. He scores on Tuukka Rask. Would you have liked to save there? Probably. And then in the third period, Toronto was able to bottle things up. So, you know, I just think for the Bruins, they need more urgency. I think that there's a lot more that they need. Urgency, physicality, execution from their game, a little bit more emotion. Take away the time and space. You know, you're not going to be able to run Toronto out of the building. In fact, because I know physicality has been talked about a lot, you've got to be smart about the way you finish your check. Because if you don't finish it, they're gone. And now you've created some opportunities. So if you're going to finish, make sure that you've got it. Make sure that you do it at the right time in order to wear them down.
All right, Judd Sirott, appreciate the time, and we'll look forward to hearing you guys on the call tonight.
Sounds good. See you, boys.
Judd Sirott joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. All right, we're up against a quick break here. We got P.J. Stock, who is in full uniform and ready to go.
He's in full men's league form as well. Just leave it at that right now.
And 9:55 is a good time.
It is.
We will continue
So it's 12:25 then in Newfoundland, right? Or in the Maritime?
Something like that.
Right, so he's fine.
All right, we'll continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show live from the BFIT Heroes Cup in Marlboro at the New England Sports Center. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, hour number two here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston joined by Billy Jaffe. We are live from the
BFIT Heroes Cup Hockey Tournament in Marlboro. We're at the New England Sports Center. One of the participants this week is a very familiar face and name to Bruins fans, PJ Stock, who is today donning the Waltham Fire Department jersey. What's going on?
I'm recovering.
Yeah.
You want to talk about
you got some oil in your game
self-inflicted wounds, though, just like the Bruins from the other night. I got a hunch these were self-inflicted.
With a great group of guys for a great event this weekend. I'm with the Waltham. It's actually the fire and police guys and a great group there. They raised last year the most money, doing it again this year. Great cause. So I've got the luxury of playing with them. And not only do they play hard on the ice, they play pretty hard off the ice. So, again, great cause, having a great time. And I got game in about 10 minutes, so I'm all dressed and ready to go.
You look like a 12-year-old who's ready for it. Came in, actually, an 8-year-old.
Got my skate guards.
Yeah, you come with your skate guards on. Your mom wasn't carrying your bag, though, thankfully. No, that's an issue that I have.
By the way, the bags with the wheels. What's going on with the bags with the wheels?
Soft society. Well, it's good for the 8-year-olds, but after about 9 and 10, start using the
carrier
shoulder strap.
Carry your bag.
Do me a favor. Yeah. I live right near Waltham. Put in a real good word with those guys, please.
I will. Billy's allowed to speed. He has to work tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, so you come in for this. You talk last night. You have a good time here. But this event here, and this is not hyperbole, Peach. This is an amazing event. Over 100 teams participating from around North America coming in. I don't know another event like this and just what it means for you to be participating in it.
I think it's the type of people that are participating. And I have the opportunity to I'm living up in Canada, up in Montreal, and there's a lot of events that I take part in across Canada, and there's a lot of people raising funds for great causes. It's kind of like this one. There's a lot of causes, but what's so special about this one is the people that are raising it. It's the firefighters. It's the first responders. It's the men. It's the women. It's the police. You look back, and I spoke last night, and one of the things is that we should be raising money for them. They're the ones that put their lives on the line every day. The term heroes is great because that's exactly what they're every day. Their life is, you don't know. They put themselves on the line. They put themselves in a position where they protect all of us every day, and you never know. And it's just I find this so special that they're the type of people that are raising funds for great causes, and there's so it doesn't have one cause. Every team has their own little reason why they're raising money, and they've raised a lot of money. And again,
and the winners get money that gets donated then
back to
their fund.
That's why they benched me, by the way. That's why the guy said, PJ, go upstairs and talk on the radio for a little bit. Our game's at 10. You go on at 10, okay? Yeah. I was supposed to be on
at
9:45.
They told you it was 10. The game was at 9. Yeah. Sorry. Listen, my team feels the same way. Danger close is like, you're the danger on our team.
I mean, I've seen some of these police fire games over the years, and they can get a little feisty.
Yes.
What's the level of play been like so far?
Well, I was +3. I'm one of those individuals. Yeah, I don't really care about anybody else. My stats. I noticed
you were pointing to the back too. You got
13. And they gave me a terrible number.
That is a bad number.
They gave me a bad
except
number.
For Billy Guerin, that's a bad number.
That's a bad number. But you know what? No one looks at the back number, right?
Right.
Just on the stat sheet at the end.
It's about the logo on the front.
That's right. That's what I tell my back, when right? anyone looks at my stats. That's what I tell them. It's about the logo on the front.
The competition is good here. What is there's 4 different divisions, I believe, A through D. Am I correct on that? I'm looking over at Mike. Yeah, 4 levels, 108 teams, I believe, 102 teams. Thank you for the accuracy. And you've got all different. You've got literally got all. You've got some teams that play together all the time, which I think is kind of crappy because you guys like us that come in. I'm kidding, guys. I'm just kidding. But they practice and they have a great time with it, and their jerseys are outstanding. We played a team yesterday that had names on the back of their jerseys. Like, holy smokes, that's nice, but guys take this seriously.
They should, and good on them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good on them. You know what? And, like, they invest so much time and energy in raising funds. And this is their way of getting out there. The work that they do, you need some way of kind of venting, of letting go.
Release the tension.
Releasing the tension.
Yeah.
And I love it. I, as long as no one hits me or bumps into me or punches me anymore. But it's been great. Our group is great, and I haven't seen anything here that hasn't been nothing but spectacular.
All right, well, go help your team out, and good luck to you this weekend.
Yeah, and can you do me a favor? I lost $25 on the Bruins the other night.
Did you really?
Can you get them to pick it up a tad? You guys mind?
I will do my best tonight.
We would all like to see that tonight. They were a little bit off.
A little tad off, just a tad off.
It happens. People, they're worried here. I think that's just this nature of this sports town. They're so used to the winning, winning, winning. And then granted, you know, the Bruins, even though it was only second round last year, and it was a great regular season last year and this year, they see a team that was just out of sorts in game one. So let's see if we can get them, you know, if they can get themselves
back.
They'll
be back tonight. Get the forecheck going, get on the D, and a little win, and win back PJ's money.
That would be good. By the way, is this being fit? It is, I guess, since it's light.
Okay.
John, is that fit, Johnny Whitesides? Okay.
Strength coach gave me the thumbs up. Yeah, and it is noon somewhere.
It is.
So. Once you get to a certain age, you need a little WD-40, right?
Right.
Just a little.
More than
get
a little.
Get the muscles loosen up.
More than a
Absolutely.
Little. Yeah, good to see you, Stock.
Thanks for stopping over.
Thanks for doing this.
Cheers,
coming
guys.
Out.
PJ
yep.
Stock with us, of course, former Bruin. Mike, why don't you grab that headset? Mike Matros is the tournament director of this Be Fit Heroes Cup, and he's going to sneak over to the other side. Perfect. First off, I mean, thanks so much for having us out here, because we're having a really good time this morning, and it's a great setup you guys got here. Tell us a little bit about this tournament, how it came together first, how it comes together on an annual basis now, and all of that.
So this tournament started a couple years ago when my fire department, Sudbury, played Framingham in a effort to raise funds for my marathon. I was running the Boston Marathon. After that, we said, let's make this a tournament. So in 2017, we had 54 teams for our first year. Last year, we had 80 teams. This year grew to 102. So now the elevation of supporting your own charity, playing for your own cause, fighting for your own cause is really kind of elevated, and people understand that now.
What was the biggest catalyst for seeing the growth multiply as quickly as it has? Was it word of mouth? Was it something that you were able to do? What helped? What was the catalyst there?
Word of mouth, for sure. I mean, guys come out, they have a good weekend, they go back, they go to, you know, up to Canada, they go tell their friends, hey, go to Marlboro. They have a really good facility. Obviously, the facility having 10 sheets of ice definitely helps grow a tournament, but it's just word of mouth and the brotherhood and guys having fun out tailgating. If you look in the parking lot, you probably saw all the RVs lined up.
I got offered like 8 beers on the way in, and if I wasn't working, I'd be like, yeah, let's go. Actually, maybe I'd be a better broadcaster.
So that kind of brotherhood or bringing everybody together for the weekend really elevated this, and that's what it's all about. That while doing a good cause for the 80-something charities we'll be benefiting this weekend.
As we're talking to PJ, he talked about the police and fire kind of using hockey as a way to work out some of the tension of the job. It does amaze me, having not grown up in this part of the country, it does amaze me how many times I would see as I was going around minor league hockey games and even at the Garden, how many times you see police and fire and EMS teams out on the ice. This is just something that's kind of ingrained in the culture of New England and in these jobs, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. So that's kind of a natural fit for a tournament. Guys want to come out, get a little aggression out on the ice, have fun, leave it all on the ice, and then go out in the parking lot and have some beers together.
Police and fire always, I mean, and I used to be with the Islanders organization, and lo and behold, they play a couple times a year, and there's always be not a little push, there'd always be a scrap or two.
Yeah.
You guys literally hate each other, or is it just
a natural rivalry?
Is it just a nice thing? Because you really need each other.
I think it's like a brotherhood hate, right?
Yeah.
Like your brother, you're always fighting, around. But at the same time, you'll have, you got his back.
I've heard that NYPD police versus fire game is a gong show.
I mean, you want to talk about stick work. It's like Ogie Oglethorpe is back out there again. It's just amazing.
I think we had a few stitches and stuff already throughout the weekend.
Some accidents and some on-purpose accident. What's the furthest away team that you have here this year?
Well, some of our guys that came from are on the Marine Corps team actually flew out from Japan. They were stationed out in Japan to get here. We have guys from West Coast. We have a couple teams from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
We have.
I know you have an LAPD team, right?
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. Okay. Sacramento. We have. There's a long list all over Canada, all over the United States.
That's awesome.
That's great. That's
awesome.
And so it's a 3-day tournament. Sunday's semifinal and championship. Everything wraps up around 1-2 o'clock. Is that correct? Two, three.
So our last championship game will be over around 3. So from about 8 a.m. till 11 or so is semifinals.
Mm-hmm.
And then while that's going on, there's also a tailgating party out in the parking lot. So, guys,
we'll tomorrow.
That's tomorrow.
Right. And today you're going to have the Bruins game on starting at 7 o'clock.
Yep.
The today Nesson feed, right?
We'll have the Bruins game on
single
here.
Single camera shot on somebody, right? No, but you're going to 7 o'clock. You'll start with that. You're going to have another event up here too, right?
Yep, correct. So we have at 4 o'clock today, actually, we have a disabled vets sled hockey game.
Oh, cool.
The governor's coming out for that. Be a really cool addition. That's something new to the tournament this year.
Uh-huh.
So we'll have a sled hockey game at 4. We have the Bruins watch party starting up here at 7. We'll go through the whole night. Hopefully we can get a win out of tonight's game. And then tomorrow's playoffs all day. And while that's going on, we have the cook-off going on in the parking lot. And we give a charitable donation to the team that has the best tailgating.
Well, awesome. See, now so that's awesome. RG, that's right up your alley.
I'm in.
Yes.
I'm in. Like, where do I sign?
I know. I may have to come back just for that.
I mean, one of the first things I noticed in here, I'm walking around like, oh, this is really great setup. And then I got my eye on a Corona like smoker smoker over here. I'm thinking, I'd like to take that home. In addition to that chair that PJ was just sitting in, which is
so. Is this from the Skate for 22 guys?
Yep.
Is that?
They made that. We're going to be auctioning that off tonight. That chair is all made by veterans, all carved in on the sides, all the different military insignias,
and it's made out of old hockey sticks. And it looks kind of like a Game of Thrones.
That will last longer than old hockey players, put it that way. But that's one of the teams that I'm skating with. The name of the team is called Danger Close, but they're a mixture of military guys and everything, and I've gotten to know them, in particular Bobby Colleton, who runs Skate for 22 for the last 4 years now. Do a wonderful job. The guys mean the world to me. I am so flattered to be in the locker room with them. Again, I said yesterday on Toucher and Rich why they want a 50-year-old guy hanging with them when they're these young guys, but it's great, and I'm in awe because we're talking hockey, but then you realize that all these guys are doing some. Same way about the Worcester Firemen that we played yesterday.
Right.
Everybody that I go up against, I appreciate everything they've done, but what they do on a day-in-day-out basis makes what I do on a day-in-day-out basis makes me feel like pretty much like a turd, you know? I mean, it's amazing. So, it's just
well put.
Yeah, I mean, it's really great what you've done. Congratulations on growing the event to this level. And continued success. And please let me know and hopefully the station know what we can do for future.
Yeah, I'd love to have you back next year. This is awesome. You guys,
anytime.
Beasley, the Sports Hub has been great throughout the whole, leading up to the tournament, at the tournament, everything's been great.
Well, we're very proud to be a part of it. Thanks again, and good luck the rest of the weekend.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mike Matros, the tournament director here at the BFIT Hockey Cup, or Heroes Cup. We will continue. We'll get into more on the Bruins as we get ready for game two tonight. Billy will be with us for one more segment. We'll get to your calls, 617-779-0985, if you want to jump in with us. Ryan Johnston and Billy Jaffe, live from Marlboro at the New England Sports Center.
Get in on the discussion, 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Right, back here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show, live from the New England Sports Center in Marlboro. The BFIT Heroes Cup going on all this weekend. Some fun activities if you want to come out here this afternoon and on into tonight. I want to thank Mike Matros, the tournament director, for joining us, along with former Bruin PJ Stock, who is playing in the event this week, as is Billy Jaffe, who's alongside with me today as well. Just a couple of events I want to reiterate for you. Today, 4 o'clock is when that disabled veteran sled hockey game begins. The governor's going to be out here for that. Then tonight, starting at 7 o'clock, they're going to have the Bruins watch party. Game faces off at 8. Terrific setup. They'll get us out of the way.
Yep.
And they've got a nice big screen here. They've got terrific sound in the place and all of that. So this will be a great spot to come out and watch the game with a lot of these police, fire, EMS, military guys who are, many of them from the area, who are going to have a pretty good rooting interest in that game tonight as well. And I'm sure the WD-40 will be flowing, as PJ Stock showed us at 9:55 this morning.
It's not a men's league, or it's not a senior hockey tournament if somebody isn't lubricating. it's what it is. It's fun. It's harmless. Yeah. It is great. The amount of tents that are up, guys bringing in their RVs.
The first thing I noticed when I rolled in here this morning is I took a lap around the parking lot. I was like, this is some serious stuff out here.
Oh,
guys are, guys,
guys rolling in RVs and, you know, they're living here for the weekend.
So. I was just wondering, though, like, meanwhile, Worcester had a full team. They had, like, the minor league team up and everything yesterday. I'm like, who's working in Worcester in the fire department?
I hope there isn't an emergency.
They're all here. God, I hope nothing's happening.
All right, let's get back on the Bruins here as we get ready for game two tonight. We talked with Judd and Bob in the last hour a little bit about the health issue with DeBrusk, which is a big thing right now. Yep. We'll learn more about that as the day goes on, obviously. But we were talking off air a little bit, too. The impact that Sean Corrali being out right now has on this series is underrated among a lot of people here in the city because – you know, fourth line, you think, okay, Grinders are going to go out and they're going to give you some quality minutes, but it's not Patrice Bergeron. It's not Brad Marchand. It does make a significant impact on this team not having a guy like Corrali in the lineup.
We talked about on our Nesson show after Sean got hurt about how it impacts the Bruins lineup and minutes and identity a lot more perhaps than people realize. And now I think we're seeing it come to fruition here is that that fourth line – Corrali, Achari, Wagner went together, used as a checking line against one of the top two lines in the opposition regularly. So they're 14, 15, 16 minutes of ice time. And yeah, there's some PK time in there too. But oftentimes, let's just call it on average, is 13 and 14 minutes of even strength time against one of the opponent's top two lines. Would it be Tavares? Would it be Matthews? It would be one of the two of them, probably Matthews. But regardless, you know, they could take either one as far as I'm concerned. But the Bruins don't have that identity right now. It's amazing how one player changes the look. I would say Noel Achari is, you know, he needs the speed on his wing. Mm-hmm. Straight line speed of Wagner and Corrali to be a more effective center. It's just a part of his game. He's an above the puck guy. He gets in on the forecheck too. He hits like a brick you-know-what house. But it's about the winger's speed that gets in first that creates things. And as a line, they've got this great harmony throughout all of them. They don't have that right now. Nordstrom is nice. He gets in, but it's not the same speed. It's not the same physical presence. And it's just been a little different. I think I'd be shocked if David Backes doesn't play tonight. Whether Jake DeBrusk is in or out of the lineup, I'd be very surprised if he doesn't play. Then the question becomes, what do the lines look like? Do you keep Kuhlman in? Do you keep Nordstrom in? Do you, again, assuming Backes comes in and Jake plays, so then what do? Do you keep Nordstrom on the left, and do you move Kuhlman down? I mean, do you move Wagner up? You move Backes to the fourth line? It's all these possibilities that we just don't know quite yet.
Let's talk about Backes for a second because it's got to be a difficult decision to hold a guy with his resume out, you know, as a healthy scratch in game one of the playoffs. It's not an easy thing to do.
No.
We know that Backes and Cassidy had a heart-to-heart earlier this year, sit down man-to-man over a beer in Vegas. And Backes's game improved after that.
Yep.
It's not like he went on a scoring binge or anything like that, but
he was producing.
He produced a little bit more, and just he was more noticeable and, you know, more consistent on a nightly basis, and he certainly got more physical, not just dropping the gloves, but
he did,
you know, asserting himself. He did that, like, was it three games or three out of four games or something like that? He got a fighting major, but he just became more physical and a little bit more assertive. Does he fit in this series? Like, can he keep up? Yeah. Is the big question against a team like Toronto.
I think, you know, utilize it the right way, absolutely. You know, obviously you need other speed guys on the line to push the pace. But it, you don't have to be hell's bells. You know, part of the thing that David Backes can do is just finishing some good hits against, you know, if the Bruins are going to forecheck, you know, two guys and get in, if he can be that second guy and finish on the forecheck, whether just one of the defensemen for the Toronto Maple Leafs, then he can be impactful. You don't want his line scrambling around chasing the play. That's not what you want. But you don't want any line doing that, for that matter. Is there a play? Sure. He can handle the wall play. And if Toronto, which seems to be fine moving the puck, you know, I give them credit again in game one. They lobbed and placed pucks into areas on forechecks, then took the wall away. The Bruins like to use the wall. Here's the funny thing. Bruins are really good when they're on. They're using the middle of the ice in the breakouts real well because the D have had a time to turn and get it up. When they're not as on and the D don't have much time, RJ, they go to the wall a lot. and the Maple Leafs took the wall away and they engaged along the wall. Maybe he can win some, you know, he can win some of those wall battles too. I just think that it gives them an identity. It's just part of their team. And I hope it makes a difference. I mean, you know, I thought they'd show up more in game one. We're wrong about that. Now let's see if they can show up more in game two. He'll be my guess is he'll be a part of it.
Let's go to Paulie. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning. Hey, Paulie. Tucker, we got the okay. All right, we're going to figure that part out. Sorry, Paulie. Give us a call back.
Hang in there, Paulie.
All right. Circle back around to something from the beginning of the show that we didn't get a chance to talk about. Maria Watertown brought up Tuukka Rask and his performance the other night.
Tough to
ask your goaltender to, you know, to be stopping Mitch Marner on, you know, on breakaways and penalty shots and things like that. But
yes and no, that's his job.
It's part of the job,
right?
But he was not getting the level of support in front of him defensively that we're used to with this team.
I would agree about that. I would agree that it was part of his job. I would agree that he was like a lot of the team in that it was at times good and at other times you'd like a little more. But he was, you know, as I said on the air, I don't put this on him. Would I love to see the Nylander save made? Of course I would. Of course. Look, I hate the shorthanded chances against. And you want your goalie to stop. Well, the breakaway, he did stop with the help of Jake DeBrusk, yep. But then the penalty shot, Marner. I that was very interesting, by the way. After the game, Tuukka made a very interesting comment, astute comment, too. He said, I should have recognized more. It was a fresh sheet of ice so he could stick handle more. You know, choppier sheet of ice, there's more of a tendency to shoot because you're not going to want to over stick handle. But Marner absolutely got him loaded on his right leg. And Tuukka couldn't power back over to his left.
I mean, he did come up with the one at the end of the second period,
yeah,
right?
The Tavares. How about so you're down now 3-1, and you have two odd man rushes at the end of the period. Like, was there 4-point-something seconds left when the Leafs had the next one? Like, come on. I mean, if that didn't show what the team was doing or I guess wasn't doing, oh, my God. But, I think like the rest of the team, you wanted more.
Yes,
but he did not lose the game. He didn't steal it for him.
Clearly,
right? I don't buy the fact. I don't think that Freddie Anderson stole the game for Tampa. For Toronto either, but he played well. He played well.
All right, let's try Paulie one more time. Hey, Paulie, you're up on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, how you guys doing, Billy? I haven't had a chance to talk to you all year. It's nice to be able to finally talk to you.
Thanks,
yeah, they put on Toronto for a remarkable display of forecheck, and I'll tell you that. And the Bruins are going to have to. You know, Mickey, they're going to have to wear them down. They're going to have to get back to Bruins hockey. This is a Monday morning quarterback, and I was saying they should be playing Backus over Nordstrom. So that's an easy call because you need to bang with these guys. The Backus can make it happen. He can disrupt the defense. Now, I'll give you an example. Chris Wagner, who had quite enough apparently in the second period, nearly took one of the Toronto defensemen out of the game. If he had hit him clean, probably would have. Probably would have ended it tonight. Probably would have put him on the bus. Okay, but he just missed him, and he got a lot of attention from the Toronto bench. Everybody was jarring at Chris as he came back to the bench. His next shift, he was afforded enough ice space for two scoring opportunities. Okay, they need more of that. Chris needs to do more of that, and the rest of the team needs to do more. They need to be getting back to playing Bruins hockey, and I mean hitting their forwards in their own end too. They got to play team defense, and they all got to get to the net. They're all kind of hanging around the perimeter on the offensive end, waiting for somebody else to get it done down low. They got to get in there, start banging, get to the net, and make it difficult for Toronto to do the same on their own end.
I appreciate the call, Paulie.
I'd be
surprised if that's not what we see tonight. It's a much more physical game and a much more engaged team.
Absolutely, but don't have to manufacture. Don't say I'm going to go out there and crush them. Let it happen. That is who you are. Be that hard team to play against. I think they have to eliminate some of their east-west plays too. That is something that I want to talk about Tampa. I guess I want to talk about,
Tampa
how
right
bad
now.
They how bad they play. Toronto will stack the line. They did a good job of that, believe it or not. Like, look, I'm not saying that they're this great defensive team, but they got back pressure last game, which is huge, and their D were able to stack up at times doing lateral plays. And the Bruins, you heard Bruce Cassidy talk postgame, gave up a few chances early shooting, can't do that tonight. Forget the lateral play. Get it, shoot it. Get the puck, or move your feet, get the puck, move it, shoot it. Do that. Get to the net. All
right.
All that.
Go suit up.
That's what I'm going to try and do today. Good talking to you, buddy. Good seeing you.
Thanks for hanging out with us.
Great
good
to
luck
here.
To you today,
yep,
and
you
we'll be watching tonight.
All right, buddy.
7 o'clock pregame, full hour pregame on NESN, despite the fact that they don't have the game tonight. It's on NBC Network. But Billy and company will be giving you a full hour's worth of pregame coverage tonight before the network takes over. So 7 o'clock tonight on NESN. We will continue for another half hour. Joe Haggerty is going to join us in the last segment, and we'll talk about his thoughts on Game 1 and what we can expect tonight in Game 2 as we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show, live from the BFIT Heroes Cup Hockey Tournament. Police, fire, military, EMS all doing battle on the ice this weekend here at the New England Sports Center in Marlboro. And we continue on the Sports Hub Hockey Show after Sarge gives us Sports Hub headlines.
Press the right hand save. Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Back here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show, Ryan Johnston with you live from the BFIT Heroes Cup Hockey Tournament happening here in Marlboro this weekend with police, fire, military, EMS teams from literally all over the country and all over the world. As what's up, Blades? How are you? We've got a group that actually a group of Marines that actually flew in from Japan for this. It's a terrific event. We've been having a lot of fun out here this morning, and Billy Jaffe has left us to go and suit up for his team. He's playing with a group as well out of Worcester, so we look forward to seeing him on the ice here. And if you want to come out here, I would certainly recommend stopping by here this weekend and taking some of this in if you have a chance. Let's now welcome in Joe Haggerty of NBC Sports Boston. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Hags.
Hey, Ryan. How's it going?
I'm doing well. What's your confidence level going into Game 2 after what we saw on Thursday night?
I think it's pretty high that we're going to see something a lot different than we saw in Game 1, just based on what we've seen, from this team all year, overcoming adversity, putting up a 107-point season, you know, bouncing back at times, mostly within game rather than, you know, having kind of an uncharacteristic full game like we saw the other night. You know, usually we see them battle and make a game of it in the, you know, second and third period. And make it a little closer than it was in Game 1. But I just think in general, they are well coached. They correct their mistakes. They make good adjustments. And generally they play really hard competitive hockey. And there wasn't enough of that in Game 1. And I would expect that it's going to be a different story in Game 2. And you're going to see the Bruins team that's much more characteristic and close to what we saw all season. If we don't, they could be in some real trouble. And it could spell that, you know, this matchup has changed, that Toronto has answered some of the questions that they had in last year's series, and that, you know, they're a different beast than they were last season when the Bruins played them. But I still continue to think that there are some matchups the Bruins are going to have success with, that there were enough outlier-type things that I saw the other night that I didn't see much during the season, that it's going to get straightened out and it's going to be a much better Bruins team. And it all starts with being much more physical. I didn't love the mindset, I think, whatever word you want to use, from a few days before when the game was played, when Bruce Cassidy said he wanted to put his fastest, speediest Bruins lineup out there. And it almost felt to me like you were playing right into Toronto's hands and you were trying to play their game. I would hope it's less about speed. Obviously you need some of that, but more about physicality and more about pounding the Leafs like you did last season and during the playoffs and slowing them down to get to your level rather than you trying to speed up to play with them. I think that was a little bit of a mistake, just that whole mindset going into Game 1. I expect that's going to be corrected in Game 2.
Yeah, Bruce Cassidy said after Game 1, you know, kind of what you would expect. Like, we got outplayed, we got outcoached, you know, kind of the Bill Belichick all three phases of the game type of a thing. I mean, Bruce Cassidy, I think, has done a terrific job with this crew since he's taken over. He's, you know, been one of the most successful coaches in the NHL during the regular season. You know, and I love the fact that he's not
shy about tinkering with the lineup in game. He's not tinkering, he's not shy about experimenting with different things. I kind of question that as well going into game one, that, you know what, like, you played really well against this team last year, and you had the answer for their speed and their skill. Why wouldn't you stick with what worked, right? Which, yeah, part of that is, let's beat them up a little bit. Let's make them play our game.
Yep, and slow them down in the process. And I think that's traditionally what you do in the playoffs, and I think that's the best mentality to have going into a long series. If you're going to be physical, you're going to be hard to play against, you're going to make them pay, and it's going to pay dividends as the series goes on. And for Toronto in particular, I think what you saw last season during the playoffs, if they don't like that, when you're rough with them, they tend to not only wear down and slow down a little bit, but I think they lose their composure a little bit and start taking penalties. And we saw a little bit of that in game one when Connor Clifton blasts William Nylander against the sideboards. Great hit. Nylander comes back, high sticks, and takes a penalty, and they scored a power play goal there. I just don't think there was enough of that tone-setting, aggressive, assertive, we're going to get in your face, and we're going to play hard hockey, and we're going to hit you kind of mentality from them. And you hope and expect that David Backes is going to be in the lineup for game two, and he's going to add to that mentality and be one of the leaders out there doing that and playing that way. And, everybody else can kind of follow in behind him. And, you also wonder if not playing him in game one, although I understand the rationale and the reasoning behind it, led to some of what we saw as far as how they were playing. And then if it's going to be a little bit of a change with a guy like Backes in there for game two that plays physical, that plays strong, but is also a big voice on the bench and in the dressing room in a competitive guy, that I think brings a little bit of flavor to that lineup, and somebody that a lot of people on that team are used to having in there, as far as the voice goes and as far as the personality goes. And just as important off the ice as he is on, and we'll see if that makes a difference in game two.
Well, especially because as Billy and I were talking about in the last segment, you're missing Sean Corrali, right? So your fourth line unit, which is so important to the identity of this team, gets broken up before the playoffs even start. And, that's, you're missing some of that, right? You're missing some of what makes you a great team. And Backes isn't going to come in, you wouldn't expect, and, put up a couple of goals and, three or four point night and carry you to a victory that way. But he provides you a little bit more of that grit that you're looking for with Corrali out of the lineup.
Yeah, he just wanted to throw hits, battle, and be a presence in front of the net when he is in the offensive zone. And really bring some of that kind of, typical Bruins, big bad Bruins sort of swagger to the group that I think they needed more of in game one. And you're right. You're definitely missing an element when Corrali's not there to a fourth line that was a huge strength for them this season. It's not the same with him out. And you lose some of that bite from your lineup when he's not there. And I think you can add some of that by putting Backes in. And it was Joakim Nordstrom much of a presence in game one? No. I think, if Jake DeBrusk does play and he's out on the ice for the optional skate that the Bruins are having right now, which, bodes well for his availability. But if he does play, I still want to see David Backes in the lineup. And I think you could very easily take Nordstrom out, put Backes in, shift some wingers around and make it happen. And, you even put Backes on the fourth line. The other thing about him with Backes is I think you can spot him in and out of the lineup when he's needed, when that presence is needed, when that physicality is needed, and maybe give him games off every once in a while, too, to make sure his legs are up to the task of trying to keep up with the pace that the Leafs are definitely going to want to provide, that you're just going to have to keep up to survive out there. And I think the fact, and we saw this a few times this year, the fact that Backes hasn't played a game in a week is going to be good for his skating legs, and he should have a lot of jump when he goes out there. And I think when he hadn't played a game in a few days and then he got back in this season, his skating looked much better. So I would expect he's going to look good and play well and be highly motivated after not playing in game one.
Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston, joining us here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We got news that Jake DeBrusk is on the ice this morning as the Bruins have an optional skate, but he is out there, which is good news because he skipped yesterday as a maintenance day, but he definitely was banged up after that game on Thursday night. He did not look right after taking that spill into the boards and the Kadri hit and all of that. So assuming he's able to go tonight,
What do you think Bruce Cassidy does line-wise? Does he stick with Bergeron, Pasternak, and Marchand together? Does he try something a little different tonight since, you know, offensively they weren't able to get going the other night?
Yeah, I think he does. I think he'll stick with that line at least to start and hope that it was just an off night for them and, you know, hope that the challenge, either one of two things is going to happen, right? Either he's going to say to them, look, John Tavares' line shut you guys down and outplayed you in game one. We're going to stick with that matchup, and you just need to go out there and outplay that line, and that's your assignment, and that's what we expect you to do as the best line in the NHL. Or, you know, with the last change, you can start to play around with it. Maybe you do try to find the Auston Matthews line out there with the Bergeron line and try to recreate what they had last year during the playoffs. But I do think, regardless of which way Bruce Cassidy goes in this game, too, I think you're going to see that line together to start and hope that they look a lot more like they did last year's postseason than they did in game one when I didn't think they were great 5-on-5, not as good as they usually are anyway. I could see Johansson going up to the second line, and if Jake DeBrusk is in, and you know, maybe Backes goes to the third line with Charlie Coyle, and you have a bigger, more physical line with those two together. He could go on the fourth line. I think there's a lot of options that Bruce Cassidy has. He could also, you know, pop Chris Wagner up on that third line as well. Based on what we saw in the last few months of the season, the last few weeks of the season, he was playing around with the forwards and taking a look at them in different combinations. So we could see, you know, pretty much anything with the bottom three lines if Backes is in. But like I said, I think I would imagine if I were the coach, I would take Nordstrom out, put Backes in, fit all the pieces together and leave that top line together to start and hope you see a little bit of that perfection line magic to start game two.
Well, pressure's on a lot of guys tonight to certainly play better than they did in game one. One guy who, look, he wasn't the reason that they lost, but I think some other people, you know, around here would like to see Tuukka Rask play better than he did in game one. He didn't, you know, it would have been tough to steal that game the way the team played in front of him, but if the Bruins get down 2-0 heading to Toronto, they're going to be in some really rough shape, and Tuukka may not be in goal, might not be in goal for game three. So, no. What do you expect out of him tonight?
I would expect a guy that's a number one goalie, a guy that is viewed as one of the best goalies in the NHL, a former Vezina Trophy winner. You know, and everybody points towards his career playoff percentage as he's this, you know, fantastic postseason goalie. You would expect he steps up and he stands on his head. And, you know, he decides he wants to be a difference maker in game two and make sure that the series goes back to Toronto tied 1-1. And I think you're right. He was not the reason they lost game one. I thought he was okay. He was not bad. He should have been able to stop that William Nylander shot that made it 3-1. I think that's a goal you have to be able to stop if you're Tuukka Rask, regardless of how many, you know, odd man rushes and breakaways you stopped in that period as well when the Bruins' defense was just sloppy as all get out. You still need to have that save there. And that's, you know, what they need out of him. And they need more than that, I think, in this game. I think every single one of those Bruins players needs to play way better than they did in game one across the board, with the exception of maybe a guy like Charlie Coyle, who I thought was really, really good in that game one. But aside from that, Tuukka's on the list along with everybody else that needs to play lights out much better in game two if they're going to go back and even up the series going to Toronto.
Overall, you feel good about tonight? I do.
Yeah, I do. I think based on what we've seen all year, I think the coach wants to respond. I think the players want to respond. I think it's a prideful group. I think it's a group that's way better than what we saw in game one. To me, that felt like watching game one, that they were not ready to go, that, you know, maybe tactically they made some mistakes going into the series based on last year's matchup, and clearly it's a little different this year with Toronto having John Tavares, with some of those young players playing a little more physical for the Leafs and maybe a little bit more ready for the playoffs. So you've got to change the way you're playing and do things a little bit differently. But I also think there's an element of, and I think we're guilty of it. I think the fans are guilty of it. It looks like maybe people within the organization might be a little guilty of it, that everybody was kind of, you know, thinking this was going to be a winnable series and already thinking about Tampa Bay a little bit in the second round. And if the Bruins aren't careful and if the Tampa Bay Lightning aren't careful, neither one of them's going to get there. So, you know, I think now Toronto's got the Bruins' attention fully, as they should. And I think we should see that reflected on the ice tonight in game two.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody's been worried about Tampa Bay in the second round. Well, first you got to get to the second round, and second, Tampa Bay's got to get there too, and they're in some deep trouble. And Kucherov's got himself a hearing with the Department of Player Safety today too, so it could get even worse for them. Appreciate the time as always, Joe, and we'll talk to you next week.
You got it right. See you, buddy.
It's Joe Haggerty of NBC Sports Boston, and he joins us, of course, on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. That is going to do it for another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. I want to again pass along our thanks to everyone involved with the BeFit Heroes Cup here in Marlboro. Come out and be a part of this today, tomorrow. They've got some great events going on. Hockey with the police and fire and EMS and military members all throughout the weekend. Again, 4 o'clock today is the Disabled Veterans Sled Hockey game. The governor's going to be here to drop the puck prior to the start of that one. That gets underway at 4 today. There's also a Bruins watch party here tonight. They'll have pregame coverage with Nesson up going starting at 7. The game starts at 8. Of course, if you're not here, you can hear it on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And then tomorrow, if you want to come out here as well, they've actually got not only hockey games and championships and all that to be decided, but they've got a cook-off going on out here as well. Some great tailgating and food and all of that. So come and take part in this event. They're raising money for a lot of great charities. All of these teams are playing for their own personal charity. So it's a terrific event, and it's a great spot to come out here and see it too if you've never been out to the New England Sports Center. So again, thanks to the BeFit Heroes Cup, and thanks to the tournament organizers for letting us be a part of this morning, and thanks to Billy Jaffe, who is probably at least a minus two by now as he is off playing with his team. We'll be back with you next week, and hopefully the Bruins will be well on their way to moving on to the second round by then. Stick around for Gasper and Murray, but I believe it's Gasper and Jones coming up next here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. I'll talk to you tomorrow for Johnston and Flynn right after the Celtics game around 3:30 tomorrow afternoon. Talk to you then.
This is where Boston talks hockey. 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 The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.